Welcome to Physique Star Radio, brought to you by Myotropics and Dr. Scott Connolly. Here are your hosts, Ian Lauer and Vince Andrich.
Welcome to Physique Star Radio, where we help you develop the physique you've always wanted and then teach you how to make it work for you. We're your hosts. I'm Ian Lauer with Vince Andrich. For those of you that may not be aware, Vince is an accomplished author as well as a brother in the iron. Vince, if you want to introduce yourself.
Ian and everyone, I'm Vince Andrich, and I'm glad to be here on the Physique Star Radio. It's awesome.
So we're back for physique fans and those interested, of course, in just training in general. It was a big weekend for men's physique competitors and just guys that love to work out in general. It was the LA Fit Expo this weekend, and had the pleasure running into Vince there.
Yeah, it was pretty lively event, I would say. How about you? What did you think?
It was a great time. I mean, I saw you walking around and texting as if to avoid me, but I was able to flag you down, and you couldn't get away. So
I had to get in line for an autograph or whatever you were getting out. I don't know what that was.
That's what it was. Yeah, it was fending off all the fans.
Maybe next time I can carry your fanny pack and make change for people.
But you know that.
Can I do that?
Well, you know, I charge 13 cents for an autograph, which is highway robbery, as everyone knows. But so change making is, of course, a necessity. Yeah. But in all seriousness, though, it was a great time, and it was really awesome seeing all of the physique competitors. I mean, we have guys coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling my wife, it's like it's a whole new day. I mean, each time I'm at an event, the last one was the Olympia, where it was a major event, and then subsequent to that with some of these local John Lindsay events in California, NPC events, and it's just amazing. That's the quality of the talent that's coming out. It's really it's impressive.
Well, you're seeing a lot of guys, and we talked about this in the last show a bit, that you know they've been training for years and just didn't have or didn't feel they had a place to go and exercise their talents and display what they've put all their hard work into. And now they're seeing that's there, and people are starting to become recognized for their physiques and not freakish physiques. We're talking aesthetic physiques that can book work in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you're going to see a whole new slew of guys that are going to be out there. And I predict that some of these magazines, if they're still alive, whether in the digital format or in paper print, they're going to start gravitating to this genre because it sells. It's marketable.
Definitely. I mean, you're already seeing that trend. If you pick up any of the magazines or you're flipping through the different sites pertaining to training, you're seeing that change and that trend shift from the old school monster bodybuilder to the men's physique. And it was very evident when you walked around the Fit Expo. There were a couple booths where you would see IFBB men's physique pros working. Noticed a couple of the guys that I've interviewed for the site before. They were working booths, and then other guys were going around and, you know, working their magic, trying to land endorsement contracts, one of which will be on our show later today, IFBB pro Craig Caperso. He was going around and talking with companies, doing what needs to get done if you want to make it in this business.
Right. No, you know, the other thing I was going to mention is, you know, the hallmark of the kind of the men's model fitness magazine, which has always been Men's Health or has been for a long time. Mm-hmm. Men's Fitness is okay, but it doesn't have the circulation. The problem with that magazine has always been the imagery is great, but the content is a little like limp-wristed. We used to always say that as a marketer, you know, in the nutrition business. It's like, yeah, the images are great, but they teach you that, you know, Pop-Tarts for breakfast are okay. They're changing, but I think you're going to see even more of a shift because these guys that train this way to look the way they do, they're serious. They take supplements and, they're on their diet. And they're not just maybe gifted with like a set of abs where they might be 150 pounds and they look good on a cover of a magazine. So that whole genre of chasing men's health and or Maxim and you know, they try to sell watches and cologne at the same time that they sell fitness stuff. I mean, you're going to see, I think, a nice mashup of that where you're going to be able to sell real fitness stuff with guys that are really serious and some of this other lifestyle stuff, which well, this has kind of been a disconnect before.
This is going to be a great topic to go into. I talked with Max Wettstein today, who's been on Men's Health Cover I don't know how many times, and he's an accomplished fitness model as well as pilot. He's already agreed to do the show here in the near future. So talking about these magazines and how to get in them will be a great topic. But I'm still, Vince, to be honest with you, I'm a little stuck on your comment of training hard and limp-wristed. All I can think of is Revenge of the Nerds and Lamar training to throw the javelin.
You understood what I meant, though, right? It was a kooky comment, but it's basically the
image. All I can see is Lamar running with this javelin that's shaking around like a slinky. So you're going to have to explain it for our listeners.
Yeah, there's a term in the strength community by Dan John and a guy named Pavel Satsaline, who's one of these Russian kettlebell experts, and they're both pretty good friends of mine. And they say, you know, guy looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane, and that's kind of what you're talking about. The guy looks really fit and lean, and then you're like, especially the content. I don't know what a lot of those guys may or may not have done, but the content never paid it off. It was always, you know, do wall push-ups and do some twists and right. I mean, I haven't looked at it lately. I think I probably have men's. I know I get all the magazines still, but they've tried to do better, but it's still soft selling it, right? Because they believe that nobody wants to work out that hard, and partially they're right. But that's why those magazines became like tabletop coffee table talk pieces. You know, the guy's bringing a girl over and he says, "Hey, you know, I'm into fitness." And she sees the guy with the abs on the Men's Health. Meanwhile, you know, the guy's really not into it.
So he gets a set of pink dumbbells and puts them in the corner and he's doing curls with the 2.5 pounders expecting to get ripped like the model. And the program in the magazine is not matching the physique that you're seeing, I guess, is the basic. Okay.
Nutrition used to be the biggest culprit, you know, because then and now you've got the nutrition companies that are the sports the hardcore companies are advertising in there, and was a lot less in the past because, quite frankly, no one bought that was reading those magazines because, here again, they weren't serious.
Right.
I think what's going to happen, and I've actually talked to a couple of publishers that are doing things digitally and otherwise, and this market represents a golden opportunity for them to finally get away from some of the stigma that we've had with bodybuilding and bring it to a new level.
Well, I mean, and when you talk about these guys coming into a new era, there were a few guys came up that just were so excited about the division and having a chance to compete. And, you know, they're asking, you know, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And it's still early. It's still young in its career. So I still think it's time for you to bring the body that you want physique to be. Sure, there are going to be guidelines and ideal physiques for the division, but I still think it's time for you to bring what you want physique to be. If you look at the pros, you're going to see a range of body types at this point. So you have to ask yourself, if you were to be a pro, which end of that spectrum do you want to be on?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and only time will tell when, you know, like Bobby said, he listened to the judges after each of his shows, and, you know, he got a lot of insight. And back in the day, bodybuilding, say in the 80s, you would ask judges and you would say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to compete at this weight in this weight class because I looked better. Mm-hmm. You didn't force yourself to be like a heavyweight or now super heavyweights or whatever because you knew you needed that much muscle mass, even if you didn't look right. See, back, you know, then it was like, I look good at this weight and that's where I'm going to compete at because that's what I'm going to run with. And I think that's part of the reason why it kind of got lost, because if you don't have super amount of muscle mass at a certain height, you know, how is a guy that's 5'9 going to be a middleweight or a light heavyweight? Very difficult.
Just not going to happen. Not in bodybuilding. And, you know, I tried to change my height class. I tried to shrink down to 5'6" in the physique, and it just didn't work out too well. They just looked at me and said, I'm too lanky. But
oh, yeah, they all shrunk on me. They kept getting shorter and shorter. I looked like I was on stilts after a while.
Now, I guess that brings an important point to the forefront of our discussion, and that is, I mean, in physique, we are in height classes, and the weight doesn't matter. How you look and how it fits on your frame at your height is what's important. And it's not about just packing on 290 pounds on a 6 foot frame and cutting down to 275. That's not what it's about. It's about creating that athletic physique that is going to look good on stage. And you and I were talking a little bit before the show, talking about, you know, what's too much conditioning, what's not enough conditioning. And if you could just, you know, go over that again, we were talking about the veins for the audience.
Oh, well, yeah, there was a time when, and it actually came out of the 60s. I wasn't around doing any bodybuilding then. I'm older than most of our audience, but I'm not quite that old. But there was, the guy that was considered the initial Iron Guru, the original. He started off by training Hollywood people, and then he started training Mr. Olympias at Vince's gym in Studio City before the original Golds opened. Mm-hmm. And his philosophy was you want an athletic, pleasing level of muscularity. Mm-hmm. It's not – if too much vascularity takes away from the shape, the eye starts going to all the jagged vascularity, and it doesn't get through to the beauty of it. Now, we know that the having legs that look like a leaf is a big plus when you're in a high-level bodybuilding competition. But when you're looking at, like, the shape and the tie-ins and all that, it can just deter from it. And so a level of conditioning that is aesthetic is also, like, a big art. You know, you need to know when to stop and not, like, try to look like a leaf.
Well, and there's nothing to not to take anything away from the bodybuilding community and what they do, because it is massively impressive. But I think with physique, it's that level of conditioning that you can get to, and that is something that you can, for all intents and purposes, maintain for an extended period of time. When you take a bodybuilder, they're peaking for a day or two, and sure, they'll be in that semblance of that look for a while, but for physique, it's like get to that conditioning level that you could maintain for almost indefinitely.
Well, you got to be in striking distance, you know, very close to striking distance as a physique competitor, which is different than bodybuilding.
Right. Striking distance.
Yeah. Now, some of my buddies have said, you know, I see these physique guys competing, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, you know, in a, 2, 3, 4 week period or mm-hmm. 6 week period. And I'm like, that's because they got walk-around muscle. They don't need to go to the depths of hell to get lean. They're close.
Right. Well, you know, talking about, getting ready for a show and changes. And, I mean, no matter if you're a bodybuilder or a physique competitor or just trying to get into better shape, chances are we have some sort of area on our body that's a little bit weaker than another. And recently, we do have a Facebook page for Men's Physique. It's facebook.com/pages/men's-physique. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's out there. Post your questions. One of the questions we had is pertains to, again, all of those people that we just mentioned. It comes in from Ryan O'Neill, and his question, he had a lot of great questions, but one we're going to address here now is strategies for improving weak areas. Because if you are stepping on stage or if you're just walking around with that walk-around muscle like Vince says, there are still areas that you want to improve. So I guess without any further ado, let's get started on improving weak areas, some strategies for that.
Well, I think we talked a little bit about last week when we discussed calves, and a lot of the specialization or bringing up a weak part of your physique comes down to first you got to assess it and realize it's there, and then address it. And one of the best ways to address that end of this sport is to focus on it. It can't be an afterthought. And so the first thing is you rearrange your training so you're fresh when, say, your upper pecs need to be better developed, you would outline a plan that was going to really attack that those strands up by the clavicles in your chest, and mm-hmm. and so it's focus. You may rearrange even your work rest schedule as far as when you do that, like when is chest day, and then you have to find some movements that actually, use geometry and leverage to basically put the most stress on that area. Because as you mentioned before, just moving the weight is not the deal.
No, I mean, when you're in high school, it's cool to move a lot of weight or attempt to move a lot of weight. But when you're just bouncing it off your rib cage and it looks like you're related to Gumby, it's not going to do any good for your muscular development. Plus, I mean, obviously you can crack ribs, crush your sternum, and perhaps just go into cardiac arrest if you're not careful. Not really a laughing matter, but I mean, some of these guys really do just try to move weight instead of actually train their physique and develop their physique.
Yeah, well, it comes down to losing a little bit of the ego that comes with the initial phases of getting into training with weights, because it's a macho deal. And mm-hmm. when you first start out, you don't want to be the one that goes, oh, this hurts, and or I can't lift that weight. I mean, we've all been there. And maybe there's some guys out there that started training and it felt great in the very beginning, but you first start lowering a decent amount of weight in any movement, it's not a normal feeling.
Well, and then, yeah, the next couple of days are a little disconcerting. I remember my first day doing squats, our football coach back in high school, that's where a lot of these guys are, of course, learning to first work out is through high school athletics. And we got done squatting, and coach at the time says, make sure you use the restroom tonight. You're not going to be able to tomorrow. And, all of us guys, we're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? And then, of course, the next day and then day two after that, we understood that trying to sit down to the porcelain throne was not an easy feat.
Right.
But you were talking about upper chest a little bit earlier, and that is an area that a lot of guys are lacking in their development on. So let's go over some strategies for those at home and how they can improve their upper portion of their chest.
Sure. Actually, this weekend I ran into Jim Stepani, and Jim's a science editor for Muscle and Fitness and a whole host of other magazines. I think he does some stuff on other sites, but he was telling me that he first heard that reverse grip bench press could be great for upper chest, and he's like, "Oh, come on, it's like a tricep movement." And he's like, was shocked. And I'm like, well, Jim, if you did even cable crosses without the cables being side by side or like even like a pec deck where your arms are going downward, if they're going upward, you can feel at the top, you can feel your upper clavicular part of your pectorals contract, because that's part of how you hold things over your head. Mm-hmm. And so it makes a lot of sense. So one of the first exercises you can try is a regular bench press, but with a reverse grip, and make sure that, nice shoulder width, maybe a little bit wider than that grip, not too wide. Drive it up. And as you're getting even higher to the point of contraction, the bar will almost come over your head more so than over your chest, and you'll feel your upper pecs contract.
Well, and it's also important to mention that when you're doing this for the first time, if you have a spotter available, it's a good idea. And make sure you're not using a false grip. Make sure that thumb is wrapped on the bar while you're doing this exercise.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
That movement there, and it makes sense. I say when I'm trying to explain to someone to try to target a certain area, you want to move your extremities in the direction of the muscle you're trying to build. So when you go with an underhand grip on the bench press, you look at your humerus, the upper part of your arm, as you're pushing the weight up forward, the humerus is raising up towards your upper chest, which is the area where you're trying to build that muscle to begin with.
Well, the old side chest movement, what are you doing? You're putting your palm on palm and you're driving up one arm to make the striations come out in your upper pecs.
Mm-hmm.
it's exactly what you're doing. And you know, that's another area to assess your body, which is, do you have any control over the area you're trying to build? And play around with functions and elbow positions and different ways to flex that part of the muscle, and pay attention to that, because that's usually, as you said, the plane of motion that you need to be in to develop that strand.
Yeah, and it's also important to let our listeners know we're going to be starting a new segment on mensphysique.com, and we're bringing in Doug Brignoli, who is a biomechanical expert. We're going to be doing Brignoli's biomechanics, and he's going to be discussing, and we're going to be doing video on a lot of these different topics, helping you learn how to build and spot build these areas you're trying to work on.
That's right. Yeah, he's one of the best. There's no doubt about it. If people don't know what his physique over the years, I mean, he was considered one of the most shapely, symmetrical bodies ever.
I was at West Coast Classic this year, and you know, he came back and just stepping back on stage, and this guy just shredded. I mean, just absolutely shredded. And I mean, I'm not sure of his exact age off the top of my head, but he's not 22 years old. And I mean, this guy is jacked and shredded. He's an Iron Man issue, this issue, and really knows his stuff. So we're excited to have him on board and bringing some great information and training tips to everyone. So, we got the old underhand grip bench press. What would be your second favorite move for upper chest development?
Well, I've been a big fan of, you can call them a bench press to the neck, or you can call it a guillotine press. And you definitely have to have a spotter, and you definitely bring the weight down off a normal bench. Probably start with about 50% less weight just to be safe. But it's a regular bench press, but you're not letting the bar go to your mid pec or right above your nipples, I guess.
Oh, nipples is it. Yeah, normally on a bench press, it's bar to the nipples. You can say nipples on this show. It's all right.
Yeah, okay, so no nips for this, okay? you got to go to the breastbone. Okay,
so raise the knees up towards the clavicle is what you're saying?
Quarter clavicle, and actually, once again, as you drive the bar up, it actually, the plane of motion goes over your head somewhat, not over your chest. Once again, you're forcing the upper pecs to do the work at the top contracted position because they're at a disadvantage.
You make you make a really good point about it going over the head. And that's where some people run into trouble working on a regular Smith machine that works in the vertical plane. Because when you're doing a bench press, there is that small arcing movement where you start typically a little lower on the chest, but it does come up over the face or over the shoulders and head as you're pressing. That's something that's lost on a standard Smith machine press.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I was just doing something on a Smith machine the other day, and it just sometimes the you can just tell the grooves aren't for the plane of motion you want. It's just it's kind of catching. Those two movements, and arguably the underhand grip reverse bench is something I really just learned about from Jim this last weekend. I did. I used to do and still do cable flies, crossovers, but with the cables coming from the ground, lower, from a lower position, and you basically rise up. Just the same kind of thing. You're basically forcing that top piece to contract when you get higher. So all three movements like that will do it. You know, a cable cross where the cable starts basically in the low position, not equal to your shoulders or higher, where you're kind of, you know, crunching down. And the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reverse grip. And they all focus on, at the end of the movement, you're basically forcing that top piece to get involved. because a lot of times it doesn't want to. And quite frankly, either the lower pec or the mid pec does the work, or sometimes the front delt takes over. Mm-hmm. That's why I see guys with big front delts and they don't have, you know, a depth in the upper chest.
Well, and that comes back to the neuromuscular junction and really taking the time and not being afraid to lower the weight a bit at times to feel the proper muscle work, the muscle you're trying to build. So,
yeah, well, that's it. I mean, I would say, you know, file the numbers off the weights.
There you go.
You do yourself a big favor because you're training the muscle. You're not in there to like tell people what you lifted.
Yes,
that's great, but it's really, that can be for your personal chit chat with your buddies if you want. But at the end of the day, the muscle doesn't give a shit.
No, it doesn't care. As long as you perform the right kind of movement to cause the necessary damage to create the adaptation, that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah. I mean, there was a guy, Claude Ragone, he was a buddy of mine, met him. He must be in like his 60s or 70s now, but back when he was like a 35, 40, my buddies in Pennsylvania had a large gym, and he said, this guy had the most complete physique you ever saw. And all he did for chest, an amazing chest, all he did was cables because that's what he felt. He wanted to feel each strand, and he did a variety of cable movements. And he never pressed.
Well, I mean,
so go figure.
It's interesting, but really the pec's job is to pull that humerus over. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense as long as you're doing enough volume and enough activation to get that chest you're looking for. So that's fascinating, though, because for most people, the press is their biggest mass builder for the chest. Another topic for another day, but talk a great chest and a good physique altogether. After this commercial break, we're going to be back with IFBB Pro Craig Capruso.
Fusion Bodybuilding makes bodybuilding's strongest supplements, and they're committed to giving back to you. Fusion Bodybuilding not only want to promote the bodybuilding lifestyle, but they also want to help build the sport. Bodybuilding is all they do. It's their obsession. You know the feeling. That's why you're here. Visit Fusion Bodybuilding at FusionBodybuilding.com or join in on the conversation on the Fusion Bodybuilding fan page on Facebook, where you'll find IFBB Pro Q&As, contest giveaways, and nothing but in-depth bodybuilding talk. Fusion Bodybuilding, bodybuilding's strongest supplements. Head over to FusionBodybuilding.com today. On March 17, 2012, St. Patrick's Day weekend, First Form and Hydralyze Ultra present the First Form Pro Women's Physique, Fitness, and Bikini Championship, along with the First Form NPC Midwest Bodybuilding Fitness, Figure, Physique, Bikini, and Men's Physique Championship, a national qualifier. This event has so many perks for both athletes and fans alike. Just ask the over 1,300 guests that attended last year's event. Taking place at the St. Louis University Bush Student Center, you'll watch IFBB Pro and future superstar Mike Liberatore and current IFBB Pro superstar Kai Green as they light up the stage with their posing routines. Six-time fitness Olympia Adela Garcia will be in attendance. The top male and female pros and top amateurs from across the country are coming to St. Louis. Plus, the RX Muscle Model Search is taking place. Here's your chance to win some great prizes, get a photo shoot, and also be featured on RXMuscle.com. Come meet the top supplement companies in attendance at their booths with free samples. March 17th, 2012 in St. Louis, Missouri. All contest information can be found at NPCMidwest.com, including tickets and prices. Don't miss it. Go to NPCMidwest.com for all information. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. Highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. RX
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
And welcome back to Physique Star Radio. Vince and Ian are still here, and with us now is IFBB Pro, Craig Caperso. How are you today, Craig?
Good, brother. What's going on, man?
Well, we're here just chatting it up about training specific body parts and how to bring up your physique, but also talking the business. As you know, Physique Star Radio and mensphysique.com in general, we're trying to help guys build their best physique and then learn how to make it work for them. So I ran into you at the LA Fit Expo, and you're running around drumming up business and really making your physique work for you. So just want to talk to you a bit about that for all those people at home that are trying to learn how to do what you're doing right now.
All right. Shoot.
Okay. Well, you were going around, and we chatted at the expo. You were talking to companies about endorsement deals. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Basically, I wasn't going up to everybody because, you know, there's certain companies I wouldn't really care to represent. So I would say certainly find a company that you're passionate about or that you, you know, care to take their supplements. You know, I would say start there. But certainly what Ian and I had talked about was, you know, making not so much a name for yourself, but making value for a company to want you. You know, there's a lot of people trying to do the same thing. And, you know, a lot of times they're like, oh, I'll bust my butt. Yeah, so will a lot of people. I'll work for less. Yeah, a lot of people work for free in this industry. And it's not always that, you know, good help is hard to find. You know, there's a lot of people out there, but it's separating yourself and trying to make a difference to a company and add value. So I would say that's going to be the first step to doing that. You know, at this point, I'm not a sponsored athlete. I mean, I just had the bodybuilding.com Silk Smile search and came out on top. I'm still, you know, figuring out what that completely means as far as, you know, being sponsored and whatnot. I still have to negotiate certain things. However, you know, I'm on the right track. I'm busting my butt, pushing and making a name for myself. And the bigger I grow, I would assume the more marketability I would have for a company to want to pick me up.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations on that win. That's a big win. And I know you don't know all the details yet, but what can you tell our listeners about what that means, at least at this point for you?
Well, what bodybuilding.com had put on is basically, I think it's 3 years in running right now. And they're pushing their body space. They have a website that's hitchtobodybuilding.com, which has a bunch of people. Kind of like, it's like a Facebook for fitness people that want to get advice and different things. And I'm an active member on there, and I post, you know, different things to inspire others, you know, just trying to give back a little bit. And they ran a contest, and there's, I think, around 255 guys. And I came out on top. I mean, there was online voting that started. You know, your different fans and different people that you were inspired by would vote for you. And at the end of the contest, they picked 20 guys. You came up with videos. And the company at that point, you know, hand-selected, I believe it was either the top 10 or top 5. I actually forget the details on how it went down. But I was selected to a top 5. They flew us in for the week. We had met with their video team. We shot some content that you will start seeing on their website pretty soon. And, you know, I assumed that we were being, you know, not interviewed the whole week, but, you know, they want to make sure that your work, you know, you can work with the team and that you are who you say you are. Example, there are certain, you know, questions and things that they would ask you, and just make sure that you are up to the fitness standards and you could be personable with, you know, the fans, if you will. So, in that, they had a physique competition. You know, it was physique-ish. You know, you're on stage, you're showing off your body. And, you know, there was, I don't know the exact criteria, but they had some. And it was just, I guess, the best marketable and the best folk model for their company. And came out on top so far.
Yes, congratulations on that. You bring up a good point about being personable. A lot of these guys are doing competitions, wanting to win and be in magazines. But in order to make it in this industry, you have to be more than than a physique. You have to be personable. You have to be able to talk to people. So, I mean, that seems, it sounds like they're putting you through your paces on that.
Right. We had spoke briefly. I mean, this was at the expo about how we feel. There's certain guys in the industry that, you know, I run a blog online and so does he. And there's different, you know, characters that we come across that's on there. They kind of just feel like things should just be given to them because they're a pretty boy or that they're this, or maybe that it was just handed to them along the line. So a lot of people are getting a reality check when they're faced against other people, just the same, just as good looking or just has the same body. And they realize that, you know, as they go on, you know, sometimes the cards fall their way. But, you know, anything you can do on a basis of promoting yourself and your image and talking to people won't, you know, it's not going to be bad for you. So learn to be personable, like you just said.
Well, and something else that you mentioned before, and I know Vince will appreciate this, being that he's kind of on the other end of it, is adding value for the company. And you do, like you said, you have your blog, and you also, for those people that may not have been to mensphysique.com yet, you're a contributing author, giving advice and sharing inspirational stories.
Right.
So that's,
I try, go ahead.
No, that's, go right ahead.
I've tried to make myself a little bit separate. There are certain topics that I try to bring up and make them a little controversial. I try to use that to separate myself in the industry. There's certain guys that just, you know, are always positive, and that's just their thing. I try to use all angles. I mean, there's certain topics that people don't want to discuss, and I try to be the guy that discusses them. But, just find your niche in the market and give back.
So Vince, when you're looking for athletes that you might be interested in picking up, what are your thoughts and what are you looking for, like in comparison to what you're hearing from Craig?
Well, Craig is right on the money, and I will say, you mentioned it, but I've been fortunate enough to be at most of the big companies when we had tons of athletes, and that was part of my gig. Maybe brought more on, except for Muscle Tech. But we're talking when Weider had all the pro guys and, you know, other brands like EAS, but had a bunch of physique guys and others. And then even Metrex, of course, we had all shapes and sizes of athletes. The bottom line is having some charisma, having a voice, and actually being part of the culture where you can lend some expertise to the young people that are going to be looking up to you, because this is what it's all about. Someone's going to come up to a booth or an event or read your blog post, and they're going to go, that guy has more information or some insight that's been valuable to me. Who's he associated with? Wow, maybe that company has something more than the next company. And all these companies are very, very close. At the end of the day, it comes down to people. People mm-hmm. make these brands. And so you're right on the money. You need to have a voice. You don't always have to be, the guy that is just Mr. Polite. You do need to be personable at the shows. That's not really the place to air out something controversial. But as far as your writing, I think having a voice is a great thing. And because everyone's going to have a blog. Why would anyone care? So those are some of my thoughts. I've seen some guys that were not at the top of the heap. They were just phenomenal athletes for the brand. Extremely popular, and actually went on to do a lot of things for their own career because of that, because that's the kind of people they were. They weren't waiting to sit there and, we mentioned it before, you know, sign a photograph and make $10. And no offense to anybody who does that, but I went through that in the early days of Weider, and the guys would come out with their change purses and they all thought they were stars. And the bottom line is, yes, they were, but if it wasn't for Joe Weider's magazines, they wouldn't have been stars. Okay. And so, you know, they needed to get a little bit of a gut check, because, you know, you can't just sit here and go, you know, I made Muscle and Fitness or Flex magazine. No, you didn't. There's other guys out there that can do the same, you know, so take advantage of the opportunity and show that you actually have extra value.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really liked seeing about you doing this weekend there, Craig, was going around and being selective and not, you know, and for all intents and purposes, you know, just kind of whoring around. I mean, you were looking for companies that you would feel comfortable representing and then approaching those companies. So that's a good thing to see.
Right. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people in the industry are hard up for money, so they'll pretty much do whatever it takes. I'm fortunately one of the people who have, you know, a gig on the side, well, a good main gig, and use fitness as, it's really a passion, but more of a hobby, and I'm using it that way. I would like to transition and make it a financial means for me, but at this point in time, I can be selective, and it, you know, I'd rather represent and be true to myself first than just endorse a product that I'm not going to use and use stuff on the side. When, you know, we get the questions all the time, what do you use? What do you use? I've been very selective on Facebook as I'm in a supplement hunt at the same point. But, you know, if you message me, I'll give you a list. And it's usually different companies. It's usually, you know, maybe one from here or one from there. So it's like, you know, I kind of feel like it was a good thing teaming up with bodybuilding.com because I could use, you know, an array of different products. And I think, you know, not everyone has the great stuff, but, you know, they may have a good product and may have a good protein or something to that relate. So it's just good to, you know, be true to yourself and, you know, not subject your morals to, you know, financial means, if you will.
Well, yeah, and then if you're in that position too, it could even be a matter of flavoring. I mean, it could be that both companies have a good product, but it might be you like the taste of this one, you don't like the taste of that one, and you have the freedom to do that. Now, this was an interview question that came up a while ago when Dave Palumbo interviewed you and was talking about a good hair day or a good haircut. I believe you have the longest hair of any IFBB men's physique pro.
Wow.
I mean, when I saw you in Golds, I'm like, this. When I saw you in Golds, I'm like, this guy has a mane and he's ripped. Who the hell is it? And I said, sure enough, it's Craig.
Yeah, this one keeps coming back. And I grew it out. I didn't always have it. I grew it out in college, and I played with it for a while, you know, with, you know, going back and forth. But it seemed to be the look I wanted. And, you know, it's becoming more prevalent now that you see more guys doing it, actually. I don't know if they're following in my footsteps or just like the long hair, but it certainly seems the younger crowd, you know, going to be doing that. So I may have to step off and change the look again. I try to be different as much as I can, whether it's with the look or whether, like I said, being cutting edge on a blog, just to remain separate from the norm. I try to do my best to stay apart, but I don't know. At this point in time, I'll keep it until it becomes overbearing, and then at that point, then maybe we'll make some moves.
That's part of the personality, man. You gotta do it, man. Come on. Nobody bags on Johnny Depp, do they?
No, not yet.
He does what he wants, man.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, so
I mean, you may be the first men's physique pro to get that endorsement from Head and Shoulders, like the guy from the Steelers.
Yeah.
I mean, we can give him a call. I don't know if their CEO's listening right now, but if he is, I think you're the guy for that.
I wanted to ask you, Craig, what's
your favorite? Oh, go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, I was just saying, I saw the one they did with Palomalu, and I was like, I'm missing the boat. I should be on this commercial.
Yeah, there you go. Palomalu, that's who it is. I knew it was a Steeler.
You got him beat, dude. Come on.
So I just want to ask you a couple questions for our listeners because they're going to want to know what your training technique is. So if you could kind of wrap it up in a nutshell, what is your style of training? How many reps do you like? What kinds of splits? So on and so forth.
All right, let me start from the beginning. I've been consistent for as long as I started. I started and I never stopped. I broke a hand, I was still in the gym. I was working the other side or working the leg. So just straight be consistent. That's the start. I mean, I'm pretty dense as far as, you know, the height and weight. I'm 5'10". I think this last stage I was 215. A lot of guys don't have that muscle size and muscle maturity yet. But I think what got me there was a football style of working out in the beginning. I used to do, like, you know, the big lifts. I was squatting, you know, in the 500 range for reps. And, you know, building the base from the ground up. So I think that's where I started. But I guess my training style is heavy volume. Something I'm adapting, something I'm pushing on my website is heavy volume. I pretty much come in the gym and for my main lift, whether it be a squat, whether it be a bench, I'm going to say, hey, today I'm doing 100 reps. And then I'm going to find a weight that I feel like I can hit like 15 reps for to start. And I don't know how many reps or how many sets it's going to take me to get to 100. But I'm going to max out every single rep. You know, I'm going to go to until I fail, and then I'm going to give myself a minute, 2 minutes, whatever I'm going to need, and then hit it again. And I think to up your intensity, you could, you know, get your rep period down. That'll help, you know, increase the intensity of the exercise. But you know, I want to lift as heavy as I can and as many reps as I can. That's pretty much my philosophy.
Okay. And do you have, like, let's say you're training a particular body part. How many, I mean, I know you said you don't know how many sets it's going to take you to get to that 100 reps, because it may be that you're getting 12 or 10 or 5 even reps per set. But how many exercises would you say you choose for any given body part?
Generally in the off season, or, you know, if I'm sitting around 12 weeks out, I'm pretty much hitting one body part per day. Mm-hmm. I'll say I'm usually going 6 days a week, 5 days a week. The more off season I am, you know, which, and this, I just told you, there's not going to be an off season for me this year. I'm going to keep it lean, try to compete with you guys. And,
that's what I like,
you know,
to hear.
Make myself more marketable, because I was always about, you know, bulking up like a bodybuilder in the off season, and that's not my new MO. Certainly going to change that style. So, you know, I'm probably going to be pushing five, six workouts a week. And as far as what you're looking at sets, I'll probably, the way I usually do it is I do a big giant set, like I just mentioned to you, and then I'm going to start supersetting the exercise. Usually I'm one body part per, but when I'm staying lean, and which it seems that that's going to be the MO, I really even haven't game planned. I just game planned for this competition. But going forward, I'm most likely, I'm going to say one main giant set, and then supersetting push-pull, something of that nature. And it's probably going to run about, I would say, three push-pull exercises. So three where I'm going to hit a chest, I'm going to hit a back, or I'm going to hit a bicep, I'm going to hit a tricep in a row. So I would say about seven total sets.
All right, great. Getting in, hitting it hard early, and getting it done.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the neuromuscular connection there, so you're going to be really feeling that pump.
Right. It probably takes me about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes to get to a workout. I don't, you know, I move fast, but at the same point, I do take my rest, because I want, like I said, I want to push that weight. And, you know, right now, if I need to turn up the intensity, I can get it done certainly under an hour. But, you know, as I'm growing and as I'm trying to build that strength, it's going to take a couple minutes on the rest period. So if you're looking at seven total sets, and I never put a number of, or seven total exercises with, you know, I don't really limit my sets. If I'm feeling it, I keep going. If I'm saying I'm not feeling enough pump, I want to move on and get to the next exercise.
Right. Well, speaking of keeping it under an hour, we still have Dave Palumbo with Dr. Conley coming up, and we're pushing it here. So I have to make sure we keep this show within the realm of time. So, Craig, do you have any last words for your fans out there?
Hey, I guess if you voted for me for the Body State Spokes Model Challenge, I appreciate it. And if not, follow me on Facebook, or, you know, follow the Men's Physique blogs that are out there. You know, I'm always in there chiming in, giving my advice and you know, the best way I can, which is just being myself and being honest. So if you don't like what I have to say, deal with it. If you do, then I appreciate it. And I'm just going to keep being me. And, you know, I say just be consistent. I guess that's the main thing you can take away from this conversation. Don't stop once you started.
Right. And Vince, how about from you?
Oh, well, I just want to say, nice to meet you, Craig. Congratulations on all your accomplishments.
Thank you.
You got the right attitude. Obviously, you got the looks and the physique to go with it. But, yeah, you're going to go far.
Appreciate it, man.
You're going to go far, and you're going to inspire a lot of other guys to do it.
It's exactly what it's about, inspiring people to take that step, and then the consistency that they need to learn to stick with it to get there. So, once again, congratulations, Craig. Vince, thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, make sure you stay tuned for Dave Palumbo and his interpretation of Dr. Conley.
Now, it's time for Muscle University Radio with Dave Palumbo and Dr. Scott Connolly.
Welcome to another edition of Muscle University. I'm Dave Palumbo, and I'm here with Dr. Scott Connolly, the owner of Myotropics Physique Nutrition. Scott, this week we got some readers and some listeners who posted some questions that they wanted answered, and I figure who better to answer them than you. And so I'm going to get right to it. Okay, you know, as you know, Dr. Conley, there's a lot of, quote, nutritional gurus out there who are constantly talking about the need for insulin or insulin spikes post-workout. Is it true that you require large insulin amounts or insulin dosages or insulin delivery to the muscles after a workout in order for the muscles to get bigger? This is the question.
Now, the answer to that, Dave, is unequivocally no. The modulation of the fractional rate of muscle protein synthesis can be brought about by principally three mechanisms. One is obviously an exercise-induced modulation with respect to hypertrophy responses. The other is obviously a nutritional modulation stimulated by feeding. And the third, obviously, is a pharmacologic stimulus that acts quite independently of the normal intracellular cascade that regulates these growth responses and targets more of the nuclear site of overall regulation of cell function to bring about hypertrophy independent of, you know, those other two variables. And this has been studied in very great detail in human beings in the last 5 or 6 years. And the responses in terms of both acute and chronic increases in muscle protein synthesis have been very well characterized. And the molecular framework that underwrites these responses has been exhaustively detailed by many different groups, all producing very similar and consistent results, something that is actually quite surprising given the complexity of the different parts of the intracellular signaling cascade that translates an external stimulus involving a load, in this case, you know, resistance training type stimulus, into a consistent and substantive response from the standpoint of muscle protein economy, or what's called proteostasis, which is similar to homeostasis, but with respect to muscle protein economy, it reflects the divergence from the usual and customary balance brought about by fasting periods of muscle protein breakdown and fed state periods of muscle protein synthesis. And that dynamic is significantly altered by the insinuation of an exercise stimulus, whether it be resistance training or endurance training. Both modalities stimulate large increases in synthesis that are quite separate and distinct from the responses that are induced by feeding. So although the qualitative response in terms of the intracellular compartment proteins that are produced by endurance and resistance training are variable, the consistency of a robust increase in fractional synthesis of muscle proteins on a mixed basis is pretty well established. Now, when you look at the nuance of this, you discover that there are essentially two parallel sort of highways that you can envision them as sort of routes where different stimuli can be translated as intracellular signals to be directed to a point inside the cell that represents the sort of central station or the master nodal point of control that then sends messages downstream to the actual protein assembly factory that gauges an appropriate response to an appropriate stimulus, whether it be exercise or feeding. That central sort of point of regulatory control has been termed the mammalian target of rapamycin, a bizarre name that simply reflects the fact that this intracellular modulator of the rate or the efficiency with which muscle proteins are elaborated is completely inhibited when you subject the animal or a human to sufficient doses of the antimicrobial rapamycin, and hence the name mammalian target of rapamycin was affixed to this complex molecular structure that integrates signals from the entire body and makes the appropriate judgments on the prioritization of downstream messaging and commanding of protein synthesis.
So what stimulates this mTOR pathway the most?
Well, it's been shown quite conclusively that the actual exercise bout itself, the stretch stimulus induced by the weightlifting movements, is the most profound stimulus in terms of inducing a modulation of muscle mass upwards in the direction of hypertrophy.
Has it been shown, has it been shown that like the more you lift, the greater you stimulate this mTOR pathway?
That's a topic that we're probably going to get into in some detail in another episode. Okay. But in fact, it's been shown that there are thresholds for responsiveness that are tied to both the absolute intensity of the load stimulus. For example, loads that represent 30 to say 40% of a one repetition maximum are grossly inferior to loads that are in excess of 60% of one repetition maximum, thus suggesting that people who go into the gym and who do not, you know, work with loads that are in that 60 plus 1 RM range are kind of. However, a more nuanced look at this recently by some very elegant experiments has revealed that the translation of the work output in the gym to the muscle protein synthesis response and the hypertrophy that ensues from that can be regulated by addressing the total recruitment of muscle fiber engagement. And that can be done one of two ways. You can go completely nuts and lift 90 plus percent 1RMs for very low repetitions. Or alternatively, you can use lighter loading, staying with one particular exercise movement and exercising to complete muscular fatigue. This obviates the necessity for individuals who are either intimidated or incapable of working with the higher loads because of some, you know, predisposition to, for example, injury, or simply they just don't care to do it, can achieve very significant and, in fact, equal amounts of hypertrophy by using lighter loads and producing a high output work profile that produces absolute fatigue. And that's part of the story that Vince Andrich has put forth in his ebook that describes, you know, the optimum training modality for producing maximum muscle size gains, which is different from, you know, a training program that is designed to produce absolute gains in strength.
Right.
So for the purpose of individuals who want, you know, the most muscle mass, hypertrophy, there are ways to do that that produce very, very, very significant increases in muscle size, cross-sectional area, that do not involve the use of very heavy, you know, loads at gotcha. Low repetitions.
So and, the physical
correlates.
Yeah. I just want to just clarify for a second, Scott. Just so the physical stimulation, the physical gym response to this mTOR pathway will spontaneously cause muscle fibers to increase in size and strength. Essentially, is what you're saying.
Right, provided the qualification of nutrient sufficiency is in place. In other words, someone cannot, you know, reliably produce gains in muscle without a supply of what has been shown to be absolutely a supply of essential amino acid. Right. And in essence, what we now know is that if you look at the responses to the predictable modulators of muscle mass, which would be exercise and nutritional input, and you look at them in isolation, you find that with just feeding responses alone, the typical profile to the ingestion of a saturating dose of essential amino acids, which would be 10 grams of essential amino acids, or the equivalent in terms of a 20 or 25 gram dose of a high branched chain amino acid containing whole protein, when you provide that threshold saturating dose, you get increases in muscle protein synthesis after a slight delay period of about 15 minutes to 30 minutes in the range of 300%. So fractional synthesis in response to nutrient sufficiency at any ingestion will reliably result in increases in muscle protein synthesis of about 300% and increases in muscle protein breakdown on the order of 50%. This highlights a very important point that the quantitative response or the quantitative driver of muscle hypertrophy is the synthesis response, not the mitigation of the breakdown response. Mm-hmm. And that's just to nutrient alone. Now, that has a very short latency of effectiveness, it lasting only about 90 minutes in most studies. The interesting thing is that in the exercise modality, provided again there's, you know, a backdrop of nutrient sufficiency without any specific timing of intake, just an adequate protein, you know, diet, that increases in fractional synthesis with training, if the training is parameters are adjusted accordingly, exhibit a robust increase in fractional synthesis about 45 minutes after the cessation of the training, lasting up to 24 hours, again, depending on the variables and how they're manipulated with respect to the loading stimulus. And all of these, again, are in the domain of increase in synthesis, not decreases in breakdown. So two things have been observed. One is that if you combine the two, if you combine nutrient intake with a 20 gram, you know, quality protein intake with resistance training, you prolong the period with which you can demonstrate maximal acceleration of muscle protein synthesis considerably, out to 4 hours as compared to 90 minutes with feeding alone. So what this means is that the exercise stimulus, being very profound in and of itself, has the additional capability of extending the anabolic synthesis window by a considerable amount of time. And that response is not influenced substantively by the combination of a protein source with a carbohydrate, which would produce, you know, significant elevations in plasma insulin. And therein lies the, you know, the real answer to your question, that the augmentation of the synthesis time period provided by exercise and nutrient administration is not in any way significantly affected by the provision of dietary carbohydrate and the subsequent insulin spike that it would engender.
So where did this all come from? Where did this whole insulin thing come from that everyone started to talk about and to try to, you know...
Classically, insulin has been known as a growth promoting hormone, which in fact it is. And this gets back to the nuance of the detail of how these processes are regulated inside the muscle cell. There are two parallel pathways, one principally initiated and propagated by an insulin signal that is delivered to the muscle cell at the membrane level, complexing to a specific insulin receptor substrate, the translocation or the bringing inside the cell that particular message that then is sequentially transferred to a bunch of intracellular mediators, not unlike, a baton is passed in a relay race. And so this signal is, you know, sequentially passed from one mediator to the other, ending up proximal to the mTOR complex by igniting a specific element in this cascade to deliver a final message to mTOR to activate it. Now that is an insulin-dependent pathway. What's interesting is that the parallel pathway, which is primarily an amino acid-driven pathway, has a crosstalk point of intersection with that through a common intermediate. And because of the fact that early humans were largely carnivorous, although they were true omnivores for sure, the vast amount of evidence suggests that where meat and fish were available and abundant to early humans, that comprised about 60% of their total energy intake. And in essence, that would provide a rich intake of the amino acid precursors necessary to drive this anabolic response to a maximum level. And what's interesting is that in humans who were largely unexposed to dietary carbohydrate naturally, for example, circumpolar humans of, you know, the late Paleolithic had really no access to dietary carbohydrate on any kind of a regular basis, and yet they had normal, you know, muscle mass and, sure, and normal proteostasis. And the reason for that is that certain amino acids, particularly the branch chain amino acids, do in and of themselves elicit a substantive physiologic insulin response. And this is the way that crosstalk exists between the amino acid-directed signaling that drives mTOR and a parallel and coincident temporally, or, you know, the same, occurring at the same time, a physiologic level of stimulation provided through the insulin pathway. You don't need exogenous carbohydrate to drive that insulin response higher.
Right, you've said that before.
Endogenous response, the physiologic response, is absolutely adequate to maximize the muscle fractional synthesis rate increases that are observed.
Interesting.
One of the things that remains to be resolved is whether or not you know, the application of a carbohydrate component to a post-workout feeding or even an intra-workout feeding would have some effect in prolonging the time course of the synthesis response. There's some evidence to suggest that might be the case, but again, as I said, really this is a pattern that needs to be looked at as a 24/7 area under the curve issue. And therefore, if someone is really trying to leverage the workout synergism of providing nutrient and exercise in close temporal proximity, then the carbohydrate issue is really irrelevant, because over a 4-hour period of time, you know, you're not going to get an augmentation, you know, that is substantive. And the rest of the 24-hour period, you need to be focused on optimizing your protein intake over that period of time anyway, which is where a lot of people fall flat.
Way short,
they think
way
that, short. You know, a relaxed workout thing is going to be the, you know, the be-all and end-all of an optimal, maximal response, and that's not true. So in terms of this, you know, high fashion, you know, I need X grams of carbohydrate right. after my workout, I that's not substantiated by any of the data that's been collected in humans involving these particular pathways.
Well, I'm assuming that probably siding on the air of conservatism is probably the way to go. Make sure you get your protein dose, like you said, which is the most important signaling factor after the workout itself. And then if you want to eat a little bit of carbohydrates, go ahead. But obviously gorging on 100 or 150 grams of carbs immediately post-workout is probably just going to delay the protein or the muscle recovery aspect, given the fact that the protein is the signal to help the stimulus. Is the stimulus to start the repair process.
Right. Nutrient sufficiency is paramount, and people need to focus on the consistency of the nutrient, which we know will reliably increase muscle mass, and that's protein.
Right. Let me ask you this question, because I finally got a chance to sample the new Physique 2.0 meal replacement shake that you created, and from Myotropics. Vince Andrews gave me a bag of it. I tried. I got to tell you, I really liked the taste of it a lot. Went down easy. It mixed really well. And would this be something that a person could use post-workout? Would this be an optimal nutrient breakdown to have something if a person wanted to have a shake post-workout to maximize nutrition?
Yes, that particular product profile is designed to essentially deliver the acute drivers of the synthesis response with a prolonged provision of other amino acid delivery to essentially carry it into, you know, an elongated time profile for synthesis responses. And it leverages the actual new science that has shown that there are, you know, other critical amino acid entry points into this process that are not necessarily mTOR driven. Again, the fact is that it's long been known that you only need to deprive animals of two amino acids to completely stop their growing. And that speaks volumes as to the criticality of understanding how amino acid flux and distribution actually control all of these anabolic processes. So the provision of critical amino acids in the right ratios, I believe, is going to prove to be the optimal way of driving these fractional synthesis responses on a, you know, temporal basis that addresses the need to be paying attention to this all day long, including, you know, first thing in the morning.
Right. When's the availability of this product going to be out? Because I know I got my bag, and I'm almost through the whole thing already.
I think you had the version that is not acceptable to me personally, taste
wise. Oh, really?
I just approved that this past week, and our first flavor system, I think, is scheduled for sometime next week. So once we have the flavor systems that I consider optimal, we'll make a blend, and we should have that out you know, probably before the end of the month. If you liked what you tasted.
I did. Actually.
Did you have the beta one version or something like that?
I think I did. It's in beta. It's in beta version.
Right. Yeah. So beta one is to me, my personal, you know, quality control check was not adequate. It was okay, but it just wasn't up to snuff. So I have been working with, you know, the R&D people to optimize the flavor profile of those two introductory flavors, and I'm kind of satisfied that we're at that point. So then the product that will come out hopefully by the end of the month will have those flavor systems incorporated, and I think you'll appreciate that. I'll be honest
with you, if I like it better, I'll say, Scott, you were right. The other one was shit compared to this. But,
well, you know. I unfortunately, that's actually my feeling about it. It's kind of, I didn't want too much of that to get out because, you know, I'm kind of a stickler for the flavor issue.
You've always been known. Metrics, when you were there, the flavors were phenomenal. And I know that you're that really is important to you. And you're right, because you know what? If people don't like the taste of it, they'll use it once or twice and then they'll switch to something else.
That's the key, is that, you know, people, you know, still ask me, well, how much of this should I take? And the answer is categorically as much as you can get in your body every day. Because the effects are cumulative. I mean, one of the interesting facets of the research is that it takes relatively, you know, unimpressive amounts of the right amino acid mixture to drive these responses to maximum. The next thing you have to, you know, figure out is how to make sure that that's kind of available to your system on an ongoing basis throughout the day and for at least throughout your waking hours. And therein lies the opportunity to really, you know, lever up these intracellular pathways to maximum red line and keep them there for most of the day.
Right. All right. Well, I'm excited. We'll keep you guys updated as to when the next, when it comes out and when you can purchase it online. For now, we're at the end of Muscle University. We'll see you next week.
This has been another episode of Physique Star Radio, exclusively on RxMuscle.com. Be sure to visit Myotropics.com for the most innovative physique nutrition supplements available today.